Here we go. Danny Schechter, your news dissector here with Polarity One, Polar Levine, for an hour of radio, based in part on my blog, newsdissector.net, based in part on what's happening in the world, based in part on our need to know more than we do about what's going on and what's being reported. Today, we're going to celebrate Valentine's Day with some very interesting music coming up in the second half of the show. But in the beginning, we want to bring you back to Tuesday night, the State of the Union message, and our President of these United States.
Thank you. Do I give this to you right now?
Members of Congress, I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you the President of the United States.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Every 4 years, we have the distinct honor and privilege of hearing the President of the United States, and the State of the Union this year was no different. A day later, the Union was still in a state, still had the problems that were there when President Obama began his speech. You should know that the State of the Union this year had the lowest ratings since 1990, when Bill Clinton gave his State of the Union address in that critical year. And also, the State of the Union speech has become sort of a spectacle. Judge Scalia, who I have very little in common with and don't agree with at all, nevertheless made an interesting comment. He said he doesn't go to it because it's a childish spectacle. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it certainly isn't necessarily a guide to finding out what's really going on in the mind of our president or in the policies of our country. One of the issues that was discussed this year was Afghanistan and the war in Iraq and the idea that somehow the United States is ending its engagement. The troops are coming home. Peace has broken out and all the rest of it. We've heard it year after year, even when troops are escalating. They basically suggest that the troops are being withdrawn. Joining me now from Chicago, Kathy Kelly, a nonviolent activist who's been involved in covering, reporting on the wars, I believe, in both Iraq and in Afghanistan. She was in Iraq before the U.S. troops got there and was trying to help end that war before it started unsuccessfully, along with millions of other people around the world. And she's just come back from Afghanistan. And she heard, I assume, our president declaring, in a sense, the end of the war in Afghanistan. Kathy, what were you thinking when you heard this prophecy from the man at the top?
Well, I think this is a man who likes to appear dovish, but whose policies have actually been hawkish. And it's just not true that all the troops are going to be coming home from Afghanistan, at least not according to the Pentagon, which says the troops will remain in Afghanistan until 2024 and beyond. And what was not said is that the 21st century military is increasingly reliant upon smaller numbers of troops, but they are warriors who intend to engage in night raids, who are trained to be part of working along with drone surveillance and drone attacks and aerial bombardments, and then they'll be training Afghan soldiers to do the same. Well, the Taliban fighters know all this, and they've just said very, very clearly that it doesn't matter to them at all what the troop levels are, that if foreign troops remain in Afghanistan, they'll continue to fight. And even, you know, Tuesday night, with the time changes, of course, we were a bit behind. But Tuesday night in Afghanistan of this very week, in the Kunar province, United States troops killed 10 civilians. And this happens with great regularity. The killing this time, there were four girls and one boy. and four women and one man. And they were all in a home. They were non-combatants. And the United States, when this happens, apologizes the next day or the next week or a month later.
Whoops.
But this happens and it perpetuates the warfare.
You know, Kathy, you've been following not just activities on the ground there, but how our media reports it. What would you say to people who rely on the American press for information and analysis about what's happening in Afghanistan? Are we getting anything close to the real story?
Well, I'd say pay very close attention to how the mainstream media finally began to question the appointment of John Brennan as the head of the CIA because of the drone strikes and the secrecy surrounding the drone strikes. And that was a healthy event, I think. But we should be questioning all of the policies. We can't trust just what is said. We have to look for what's not said.
You know,
and
one thing
it's
that
our
nobody...
job to do that now.
Yeah, Polar Levine is with me. Yeah.
Yeah, one thing that nobody in the media ever seems to ask when this comes up is how many contractors will be there after all our troops supposedly leave. Do you have any idea about the numbers?
No, I think it's impossible to get accurate ideas about the numbers. I mean, we were told that there would be as many contractors remaining in Iraq, for instance, as there were military, and now there are probably more contractors than military. Certainly, I can say that the contractors are very apparent in the airports and on the airplanes. But once you're in Kabul, I don't know where all the Westerners are. I don't see any of them. We walk pretty freely around in the streets of the neighborhood and travel to various neighborhoods. But most of the Westerners seem to be behind fortifications, barbed wire, multiple walls outside of wherever it is that they are working or living, and traveling always in security vehicles.
Yeah, and I assume, Kathy, that the contractors are not included in any numbers of troops that we have on the ground.
No, we can glean various indications. You've probably heard of the company Blackwater, which
yeah.
was so notorious both in Iraq, and they also killed Afghan civilians and were convicted of it. They stole weapons from the U.S. military and were convicted, and they changed their name once, and now they've changed it again. Their new name is Academy, A-C-A-D-E-M-I, and they've got the contract to construct Camp Integrity. That's the name of a new base. It'll occupy 10 acres outside of Kabul, and it's only for training in special operations, special forces-type activities, like the night raids and calling in drone strikes and arranging for aerial bombardments.
And interestingly enough, the troops that we've been training there have just been accused by the United Nations and haven't denied massive abuses of civilians, brutality and abuse and torture. True?
Well, they say that, according to the UNAMA report that was released, over half the prisoners being held in Afghanistan reported having been tortured. And also many of them are held for months without charge. And maybe the International Commission of the Red Cross can figure out, you know, where somebody's loved one is. But, you know, most average ordinary Afghan civilians are terrified to go to a base and try to ask questions. You know, where is our brother or our father or our son? The way in which the United States has helped to foster various kinds of militias is so frightening. You know, General Petraeus was keen on something called the Afghan local police. This was his version of counterinsurgency. And it meant that you could basically choose the strongest people in a neighborhood or in a village. And sometimes they were Taliban fighters who just happened to return and didn't have any income. And you'd give them weapons and minimal training, and all of a sudden they'd be going to basically force people to pay them an extra tax or a tithe because they were the new
So it's also shakedown time.
Sure, and if you didn't pay it, you'd be beaten bloody in front of your students if you're a teacher.
Now tell me a little bit about your work in Afghanistan and what you and your organization do, because, you know, of course, we read reports about the press, and the press is self-referential often, talking about the press and of course, officials. But, you know, seem to very rarely give us a bottom-up view of what's going on. So how did you end up in Afghanistan, and what are you doing there, and what have you been seeing there?
Well, we really do believe where you stand determines what you see. We had organized 70 delegations to Iraq, and I guess I went there 27 times. We stayed there all through the shock and awe bombing in Iraq. And often what we were seeing was different from what was being reported in the mainstream media. So we felt it's always important to try to stand alongside or live alongside the people that are experiencing the brunt of warfare. And we realized that even though the war in Afghanistan has gone on since 2001, our particular group had paid next to no attention ever to what was happening in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And we began to feel uneasy about that. I mean, it was a major war. So we did start to go to Pakistan and build up some contacts and learn more about drone warfare and drone attacks. And even the Pakistanis told us, you really should try to go over to Afghanistan. And our first visit was to a hospital, a network of hospitals run by Italians. And we had known these Italian hospital workers and others that worked alongside them in Iraq. And so after staying for 1 week in a hospital in the Panjshir province and then another week in Kabul, we learned a great, great deal from the staff, from patients, from people who came to visit us at the hospital. But you can't keep going back as guests of a hospital. Hospitals have other work to do. And we also were then able to connect in that trip with young people that we talked with on the phone, and we'd been so impressed with them. They lived in the Bamyan province, and they called themselves at the time the Afghan Youth Peace Volunteers. Their coordinator had been living in Afghanistan for, at the time, about 8 years. His name is Dr. Tekyang Wee, or Hakim, as the Bamyan people affectionately call him. And he said, well, come and visit us. So we went in October of 2010 and were the guests of the Afghan Peace Volunteers in Bamyan. Now, they got death threats over the course of several more months because they were trying to live and work together inter-ethnically. And then after one of our delegations visited with them in Kabul, the home of the coordinator was burned to the ground. The death threats seemed to escalate. There was a lot
And these were peace workers. Kathy, let me just give our number here to anyone who might want to join us on the phone and ask you a question and help join this discussion about what we're not seeing in the war in Afghanistan and what we need to know here. 888-874-4888. That number again, 888-874-4888. Here on PRN FM, which is the Progressive Radio Network. So, Kathy, I just have to tell you that you're on my list of the brave, okay? You've been up front witnessing on the ground what's been happening, what our policymakers are actually doing, not what they're saying. And in a way, has it made you, given you more fortitude, more of a sense of the necessity to oppose these wars, or do you feel like it's almost hopeless?
I don't think that it's hopeless. I think that our job is to keep planting the seeds. And we can't predict what might come around the corner. You know, the Occupy movement impressed me that in 12 weeks they had globalized the logo 99-in-1. Well, who knows what may be coming around the corner. There certainly is a war-weary planet. I'm also, like, for instance, in Afghanistan, very conscious that 65% of the population are under 25 years of age. And many of them have been traumatized by war, bereavement, loss, living in refugee camps. So the young people that I live with and stay with, I mean, I go over there mostly to listen and to learn from them. They've had plenty of reason to want to practice revenge or retaliation, really much more reason than counterparts in terms of their age in the United States who might just, you know, go over to another country and pick up a gun and be trained to shoot other people because they, you know, don't really have a lot of alternatives necessarily here in the United States. But these youngsters don't want revenge. They really are serious. They want to live without wars. And there may be counterparts for them all over the world who start to realize, you know, when we get into internecine battles or civil wars within our own countries and just burn ourselves out fighting, we make ourselves more vulnerable to exploitative, I'll even say imperialist, countries that want to take our resources or control the pricing and flow of resources or use us for geopolitical gains.
So let's just kind of a couple of issues that, when you speak to people about the war in Afghanistan, at least when I do, I get a duh, you know, kind of, you know, oh, that's Al Qaeda, and they, you know, we're there because it's payback for 9/11. I mean, that's the way it gets broken down to most people. What is the Taliban and Al Qaeda the same thing? Were they ever the same thing? How do you understand how this all got going?
Well, we should keep in mind that Leon Panetta said, when asked, well, how many Al-Qaeda figures do you think there actually are in Afghanistan? He said, oh, about 55.
55?
That's 55, that's what the man said.
And that's when we had what? How many of our troops were there?
Oh, gosh, I think at that point we had 90,000 troops and spending $2 billion per week. $2 billion per week spent on the war in Afghanistan. And, you know, some of that money goes right into the pockets of drug lords and warlords because it can cost. Now, you may think I make stuff up. It's not true. I don't. It could cost $400 to $800 to fill 1 gallon, to put 1 gallon of gasoline in the tanks of an airborne or a landborne military vehicle in Afghanistan. Because in order to move those vehicles along the roads, drug lords and warlords who control those roads, who control entire provinces, just bald-faced say to the United States, if you want your truck's convoy to go along our roads, it's going to be X amount of money. Otherwise, we're not going to let them go or we'll burn them to the ground.
It's their version of a toll booth.
Exactly. And they say, you rent these roads from us. And the United States hasn't had a whole lot of choice. They've had to pay because they have to deliver supplies
and
fuel and ammunition.
So we're financing, you know, the whole criminal underworld there. Uh-huh. But on top of that, then the Taliban taxes the underworld, right? I mean, it seems like we're funding, quote, the enemy.
Even our development aid has gone to fund incredible corruption and changed a society into one that has become hopelessly corrupt, it would seem, right now. The SIGAR report, Special Investigator General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, says that the amount of money the United States has spent in development in Afghanistan now approaches $100 billion. Well, you know, keep that in one hand, and then on the other hand, one out of every 11 Afghan women dies in childbirth, a tortuous way to die. One out of every 5 children under age 5 doesn't live beyond their 5th birthday. 35% unemployment amongst males.
And all the money that could be spent in our country creating jobs and doing things. I mean, I read this story. I guess you'd know about it, too. The Kabul Bank, you know, it's Occupy Wall Street was out there. We found out that Wall Street bankers had helped set up a bank in Kabul that was a total criminal enterprise.
Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, he can do very little about these corrupt activities. He had to appoint a warlord or a drug lord, you know, blood-stained hands for these criminals in every cabinet-level ministry except for the Ministry of Agriculture. It seems like somehow that one is not a former warlord or drug lord. And they tell him, that you better pass this law. And so he's had to now codify as law abuses of women that include the new law that a woman is not equal to a man in the education world or in the workplace, and that any man has a legal right to force his wife into submission and to obeying his rules within the home.
Well,
you know, the Taliban may have said, okay, this is the way it is, but they never were able to make it a national law. But this is what the drug lords and warlords in the corrupt parliament have forced Karzai to do.
A lot of times the media will focus on abuses of women as a Taliban crime. You know, this is what the other side, what these fundamentalist maniacs are doing to girls and women in Afghanistan, when in fact many of those rules are supported by the government that we finance there.
Well, I think it's been a tactic of the United States to try to portray United States wars as humanitarian wars. It's an oxymoron to me. But, you know, one young engineering student in Bamyan asked me a question once. He said, do Americans care more about fingers than noses? I'm sorry, do Americans care more about noses than fingers? And I was completely baffled, and I said, I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean. And he just posed the question again, like, how could you not know? And I said, I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. It was in a public event. And then he held up a picture of the cover of Time magazine when a little girl, Aisha, was the cover story, and her nose had been mutilated by members of her own family. Well, of course, that has people across the United States gasping and saying, just as you said, how could people be so maniacal? Well, then he told me about a group of United States soldiers who had what they called killing sprees. They would execute a civilian, cut off the civilian's body parts, and store them in jars to bring them home later as war trophies. And this is why he'd pose the question, do Americans care more about noses than fingers?
Oh, that's chilling. And, of course, there's a history to this, both in Vietnam, even going back to the Philippine War, where these kinds of abuses were regular. I mean, what goes through your head, Pilar, when you hear about this?
One of the things that goes through my head is that while we're in fighting all these wars, we're also training the enemy for the upcoming war. And does anybody talk about that? That time after time after time, we're training soldiers supposedly to protect the government after we leave, and we wind up actually training the enemy. And here we are we're training the Afghan army, and we're about to be training the Malian army.
Well, you know, there was an embedded reporter, John Shea, who wrote for the American Prospect, and he gave a fictitious name to the squadron he embedded himself with. He called them the Destroyers, and he gave a name to the squadron sergeant. He called him Sergeant Gibbs. And at the end of a week of utter devastation of homes that they had tornadoed through, where they'd broken people's furniture, hogtied the householders, hurled people around, offended the women, at the end of it, Staff Sergeant Gibbs, a fictitious name, said, you know, you could say we just engaged in a week of recruitment for the Taliban. And you know what? We had fun doing it.
Well,
I liked
nice.
Recruiting for the Taliban. It's job security for me.
And what happens when these people come home completely mentally destroyed, traumatized, stress, it's, and they bring all of these conflicts into their families, and then which lead to divorces or killings of family members. I mean, it's not like, you know, all of this is done cost free. There is a cost to the American culture and to the American family as a result of all of this. And none of this, of course, was mentioned in the State of the Union address by our president.
Or the suicides outnumbering the deaths caused by combat.
You know, or eBay sales of ears and noses.
Mm-mm. Well, you know, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said, have tender hearts and tough minds. And I think we need both. You know, every returning person who's been sent off to one of those wars should be given full benefits in terms of care and should be welcomed into communities and looked after. But that doesn't mean that we suspend our own thinking processes. I think we have to kind of shoulder the responsibilities to be adults in these crises that all these wars generate, and recognize that we're not helping children in Afghanistan, we're not helping children here. You know, the threats that we face here have to do with the environment and what we're doing to our planet in terms of wrecking the planet with our lifestyles and with the kinds of overconsumption and the pollution that we create. But, the trauma is happening amongst people in Afghanistan also, and it's something that is exceedingly difficult. I mean, even just living with 9 to 12 youngsters, I can see, you know, in the middle of the night, 1 in the morning, one of them will wake up screaming. They have memories of having been in refugee camps. One, they had to hold him in a hammock over an open flame trying to thaw his body out. He nearly froze to death in a refugee camp. They talk about, you know, Faiz talks about his brother having been killed before his very eyes of Abdullahi and Hamad Jan's father was killed. Several of the young people are orphans. But they are trying so hard to open up their communities. You know, they're learning the Pashto language, those who speak Dari. And they're encouraging young women to be part of their work, even though that's a pretty dicey, risky thing to do. And they turn their home into a place where seamstresses and their burkas can come and form a sewing cooperative. And I see all of these creative things happening, and I can't help but feel hopeful. But you won't find the mainstream media showing much interest in humanitarian concerns.
So, Kathy, it's Valentine's Day here in the U.S. of A., of course, and other parts of the world. And we're talking about love, and we're talking about, some of the positive human interactions and feelings that we all need. And yet there's all this horror in the world that you've chosen to expose yourself to, not once, but many, many, many times. You've been a soldier for peace, in my opinion, a drum major, in Dr. Martin Luther King's words. How do people who are listening reach you and your community, and how can they be helpful?
Well, I live in Chicago, and I'm in a second-floor apartment with the Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Our home is our office, and if anyone comes to Chicago, you're, of course, welcome to visit us. Website is vcnv.org. That's the acronym for Voices for Creative Nonviolence. We really encourage people to be involved in their own grassroots community efforts. April Days of Actions are happening all across the United States. With regard to drone warfare, there are days to protest the research and development at universities that are developing the drones and the drone warfare capacity. There will be days to act at military bases and at other places, Air National Guard fields where the drones are being operated. So that's one thing. I think it's also a good idea to give support to people who might be willing to travel to Afghanistan, to Iraq, to Gaza. These are the places where people from our group have gone just in the last 6 to 7 months. And if people feel like, you know, maybe they'd like to go and be part of a small delegation, that's one way. You know, you can come back and talk to your neighbors and friends about what you've seen and heard, or give support to someone else who wants to do that.
Okay.
Or support a young person who wants to learn Arabic or Dari or Farsi. These are important.
Well, Kathy,
steps.
You know, we have a president who's given a Nobel Peace Prize. I think it might have been, you know, more appropriately given to you for your work over the years. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for this time.
And we'd love to share. We have a podcast of this program, which we'll share with you, and you could put it on your website if you want to. I think that people should know the work of this group, the Kathy Kelly's commitment over so many years. I have a great deal of admiration. I haven't had a chance to really tell you that directly, and now I do. So happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, Kathy.
Thanks,
Kathy.
They say
Valentine was in prison, and he used to send notes out. So our friend Brian Terrell with Voices, he's a co-coordinator, he's in prison for 6 months for crossing the line at Whiteman Air Force Base. So celebrate him today, too.
Okay, and we're going to be talking more about St. Valentine's Day and love and relationships in the next segment. But first, this is a musical message.
Sweet revenge for the chosen son. Wave the flag, salute the gun. Tell me again what that just said. What is it you're hiding? And the news you're not providing. The innocent will foot the bill. The guilty are in speaking. The God of war is the Son of the Man. And this ain't no fucking cosmic plan. 70 virgins in the sky. 70 virgins in the sky. 70 virgins in the sky. Yeah, a tank full of gas and a plane to fly. An SUV and a rocking band. was Disneyland.
Your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Bake the cake. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked the cake. How'd you do?
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
Hey, happy Valentine's Day, ladies and gentlemen. Let's ask this question. Love and marriage, does it actually go together like a horse and carriage, or is it like an institution that's as obsolete as a horse and carriage? That's something to talk about.
Well, the Polarity One, Polar Levine in the studio with me. I'm Danny Schechter, your news dissector. It's Valentine's Day, of course, and everybody is busy giving things, getting things, thinking on this one day anyway, perhaps about love and romance, perennial concerns of all of us in a way. All you need is love. You know, it's, you can think of a love song anytime and everywhere. And at the same time, we're in a world where the divorces seem to outnumber the marriages. There's a great deal of cynicism about relationships. There seems to be a great deal of crassness and sexism in the culture as well. Something which briefly was sort of on the run back in the 70s when the women's movement was emerging as a major force in American life. And then what's happened since then seems to be a lot more crassness. We have a guest on the line. You want to introduce her?
Yeah, Shemion Antoine is on the phone. She was going to be with us in person, but she got hung up, and she's here. Shemion, are you here?
Yep, I'm here, guys.
All right.
How are you?
Yeah, we're talking about love and marriage, and mainly love, you know, with or without marriage. You know, there was something that you mentioned concerning if I knew you were coming, I would bake a cake.
A lesbian couple actually in Oregon went into drive to today's modern love, and the baker refused to bake a lesbian cake for the couple. So actually, they
see, this is why it's better to have you here, because the lines are breaking up a little bit, and it's hard to make out everything you're saying. But, you know, just the notion that we can talk about gay marriage, gay love, is really a development that we haven't. We've been sort of sheltered from, and somehow when the laws change, certain topics become more, in a sense, more freely spoken about, which is good, I think.
It's really good. I mean, I felt for the past few years that when, you know, my kid is of age to vote, which is about now, that, the entire field throughout the country is going to change on gay marriage, and it's just going to happen, and it looks like it is happening, you know. And actually, Shemion was referring to a bakery, I think it was in California, that refused to bake a cake for a lesbian couple going to get married, And I'm wondering, what are the ingredients in a lesbian wedding cake? Maybe it was, you know, they couldn't come up with the gear.
Well, the ingredients in the decision seem to be the same fear, paranoia, hatred, and what have you that have held back progress. But, you know, what I sense is that once you have cultural change tends to lead political change. And I think that President Obama's positioning on this whole issue of gay rights, which he avoided in the beginnings of his first term, you know, is an indication that in a way it helped me to create a culture of support for the initiatives that he wants to take. And he's reaching out across not only the sexual lines, but gender lines and cultural lines to be more inclusive. And I think that that's something that will impact our politics as well. And
is impacting.
I think
so, yeah. I mean, when you have football players coming out, you know, in support of gay marriage, I mean, you're really saying something about speaking to people in the red states, those who'd be inclined to want to stick with the traditional way. Well, because it's traditional and it's the way we always did it, and therefore it must be the way God intended us to do it. But football players?
So, you know, sorry that we lost you there for a few minutes. You want to finish your thought? We talked about the cake.
Yeah, I'm going to tell my story, damn it.
Go ahead. Go for it.
But it's a happy ending because actually, I don't know if you watch, if you're a reality TV buff, but, you know, it's fine that Sweet Cakes by Melissa, by the way, decided not to bake the cake because they ended up getting a free cake from Duff Goldman. That's the guy from Ace of Cakes.
All right.
So he kind of stepped in. He came to the rescue. And I'm sure it's 10 times better than whatever they would have gotten from what I'm sure is a lovely boutique somewhere in Oregon.
All right.
What is your sense of the, you know, changing culture in America? Is it really changing? Are you feeling optimistic and hopeful that we're moving into an era of greater tolerance and greater respect for people of all backgrounds and sexual orientations?
Well, I mean that sounds really optimistic. I'm over realist. I'm every kind of minority. I'm bisexual. I'm black. I'm a woman. I'm an immigrant. I'm optimistic though also because I think that it's more of a case of you can't really put the genie back in the bottle. I think that once a group realizes that they have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and they coalesce around that fact, you're not going to convince them otherwise. So you've really just kind of got to go with the flow. And there's an entire generation now, just the same way, you know, before you had, you know, the end to segregation, there's an entire generation that grew up not knowing anything about segregation, which wasn't always the case. So you've got people growing up, you know, who are just, you know, I mean, these kids just assume that if you're LGBT, if you're gay, you're a lesbian, you should be able to take your girlfriend to prom or your boyfriend to prom, or, you know, even if you're transgender, you should be able to be left alone and love who you want. And it's just, they don't give it a second thought, and you can't go backwards. It's just the way it is.
Join us on the phone if you'd like at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. If you want to share your views about Valentine's Day or the issues that we're talking about rather awkwardly here, we thought this would be something that we really should talk about in more personal terms as well.
Let's play some music about the philosophical question or the philosophical scientific question of is lust, is our thing for love and lust in marriage in our gene pool? Is this an evolutionary thing?
Is this a trick question?
Let's see if we have a musical answer.
I couldn't resist him. His eyes were like yours. His hair was exactly the shade of brown. He's just not as tall. Tell. It was dark and I was lying down. You are every spin. He means nothing to me.
and Mrs. Jones. We got a thing. Know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. On one hand, I count the reasons I could stay with you and hold you close to me all night long. So many lovers' games I'd love to play with you. On that hand, there's no reason why it's wrong. But on the other hand, there's a golden band.
So we just heard all sides of that issue of doggery. We heard from Amy Winehouse from her song Heard Love is Blind, and then Billy Paul with his classic Me and Mrs. Jones, and then Randy Travis giving the other side of the coin on the other hand. And then we ended with Muddy Waters, the same thing. Now, here's the thing. Muddy Waters is suggesting that we Homo sapiens are no different from other critters. You know, we're just dogs. You know, we get this thing surging through our veins when we see the object of our affection. It just can't help it. Is this an evolutionary thing, or is it just the devil, you know?
Well, I personally haven't pissed on the rug in quite a long time. It's been a while, but, you know, I get the urge, but, you know.
You do, huh?
Well,
yeah,
clearly,
yeah.
I mean, also, look, Danny Schechter here, we're also living in a very sexualized culture. It's not just a sexual culture that's people-driven. It's a sexual culture that's driven by advertising agencies, by commodities, by using sex and the appearance of people and all of this as an instrument, not just to tell, but to sell, and to sell us on buying, you know, satisfying our desires with products of all kinds. So it's not like we can't really remove all of this from the whole discussion of capitalism and of the values of a corporate culture, which, you know, kind of invests heavily, as does Hollywood, you know, on sexual images that are going to bring us to the theaters, are going to bring us to the malls.
Well, I think, you know, doggery has been going on long before capitalism and advertising. I mean, but it's interesting to think about. I mean, are we just about, you know, the same as any other mammal? Is as we have, you know, we get this drug, this brain-induced drug surging through our veins, and then there's the issue of, you know, what do we do about it? I mean, I was one of those dogs for a long time, you know, having affairs with married women and just, you know, just like whomever. And but on the other hand, you know, I'm a family values guy. And I always said, well, when I finally, you know, settle down with somebody, it's going to be the one person I'm going to stay married to. And, you know, and after 20 years of finally finding
the
that person,
girl that I marry will have to. Listen, look, I mean, these are all contradictions that we live with and different conflicts that we have. There isn't like one right answer somehow, other than, you know, some sort of kind of appeal for treating each other fairly and honestly and ethically to some degree, and not using and abusing each other. I mean, obviously, there's sexual drives are very powerful, but so is the desire for romance. I mean, there's a new study that just came out about how people might say one thing, but secretly they all want long-term relationships. What say you?
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, I've known guys that just cannot keep their hands off of women, but they moan seriously about wanting that real relationship. And if you're driven that way, and to a point where you of addiction, you know, it's easy for us to, I don't know, to worship those people or disparage them, but it's a tough bind.
HBO.
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, you talk about worshiping or disparaging, but, you know, one thing that actually really interests me, you know, as someone who, you know, talks a lot about women's rights and the way women are treated by men, you know, what women like or may dislike about, you know, male culture is that, you know, I definitely think you're right. I think that, you know.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
Just when you were about to say the definitive thing, the phone goes blank. Thank you, Mr. Verizon, for that. Unfortunately.
And Shamion always has interesting stuff to say.
That is the frustration. Hopefully you can come back come back on. We still have a few more minutes here. But, you know, I was just commenting about all of this. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Shame. It's now on HBO Go. It's a movie that was really about sexual addiction here in New York, and about a guy whose whole life revolved around, you know, sexual, you know, kind of obsession. And he really wasn't able to have relationships. He actually drove his sister away, almost into killing herself. He had no ability to really talk with or communicate with people other than in a sexual way. And you saw how empty that life is.
It's a tough thing, yeah. I mean, it's a tough thing on everybody. You know, later in my doggy years, you know, when I got a bit of maturity, you know, I made it a point that that the women I would be seeing on a cash level, we would state very clearly that that's, you know, what it was about. It seems to be a more humane thing. But, you know, I got a song that's real interesting that will bring up another romance issue.
Okay, tell us what the song is.
I'm really sorry about that. This is a song. It's a digitized recording from a 1916 song by the girl on the cover of a magazine, and it's by Harry McDonough. And now this is really interesting. It's about this guy who's fallen in love with a woman that he's seen on the cover of a magazine. And this is back in 1916. And here we are with Manti Teo falling in love to a degree where he states for two solid years that this was his girlfriend. You know, I mean, it's it's a real interesting thing, and it goes beyond my own history of perversions. I just don't get it.
Are you back with us?
Yep.
Okay, so you were saying, and then you weren't saying. You want to finish your thought?
Oh, yeah, please.
Yeah, well, no, I just, you know, brevity, right? Well, I was just saying, you know, as, you know, connecting to the magazine thing, you know, but, I mean, we receive signals, I think. And I think that, you know, men are constantly told that really they ought to want sex more than love. I really think that they're meant to sort of, like, you know, worship the conquest, you know, and then physicality of it, you know, the power aspect. And really kind of, you know, I mean, if you're a married man and you just admit that you love your wife and you only want to stay with her, you know, I've most of my friends are guys, you know, watch how well that goes over, you know, in a group of guys around the poker table. Yeah, I just think that, you know, you got to reinforce good behavior. And I think that for men, they get a lot of, you know, they just get a lot of signals to the contrary. Of, you know, of what is the fact, and which is, you know, that love is actually, you know, pretty great.
Well, you're listening to a Valentine's Day therapy session of the air with Paula Ravine and Danny Schechter. Tell us your name again. So at least, I'm sorry, Chamillion?
Chamillion, yeah.
And we're so happy to have you on, and hopefully we can lure you out of the Lower East Side up to the Upper West Side into our studio next time to be part of this, part of our discussions on the air here. We are going to go out with a song in a minute, but first a few announcements. First of all, the podcast of this program is available in the PRN.FM archives, and you can listen to it and listen to our earlier shows. If you like what you hear, please vote for us or whatever you have to do to try to tell other people to check it out and listen in as well. Also, my blog is at newsdissector.net, and the new mediachannel.org is up and running. You know, I think you'll really find it interesting. We have lots of content, articles from around the world, information and analysis of what's not in the media. We also have the interview we did on the program last week with Norman Solomon on MediaChannel.org. So please check it out if you like it. Subscribe to it. Support it. Help us bring the Media Channel back into the world in a major way. And I'm working very hard on that as part of the effort of our work. I'm also just finished a film about DeWitt Clinton High School. You can go to our page Facebook/DWC film and find out more about that as well. If you want to check out the work of Polarity One, the website is
PolarityOne.com.
Very easy to remember. That's Polarity One.
And the number one, yeah. Polarity and the number one.com.
And the number one.com. And his music is there for all to hear and to listen to. So we're trying to mix it up here on this program with both news and analysis, with information that you're not getting elsewhere, with voices from people who are very knowledgeable about what's going on in the world, who have agreed to come on the program and will be coming on in future weeks. I'm really happy to have Polarity One in the studio with us regularly now to add some more to the mix and to the analysis that we need to hear. We're going to go back to the NDAA issue. When the courts rule on it, it's obviously a major worry, you know, that we're moving from a democracy to a military dictatorship, potentially, where anybody can be detained indefinitely. And so that's a concern that we have been raising and will return to raising again. So that's basically what I wanted to share with you. I hope you find it of interest. If you want to write to me, dissector@mediachannel.org. Quickly, let's go out musically.
Yeah, I'll give myself one plug there. We ended the first segment with a Polarity One song, 70 Virgins. And now the ultimate Valentine's Day song, Let's Stay Together by Al Green. Happy V-Day.
Whatever you want to do is all